Hello, and welcome to On the Leading Edge with Leading Edge Real Estate, where we explore what it takes to build and operate a successful real estate brokerage, how to grow and scale your real estate business, and how to market and promote yourself to become the go-to real estate expert in your community. At Leading Edge, we understand and truly believe in a holistic approach to work and life. And we help real estate professionals get there through state-of-the-art technology, innovative training, and a culture that empowers all to flourish. Let's get started.
Hi, I'm Linda Okoneski, CEO of Leading Edge, and today you are listening to On the Leading Edge, Redefining Real Estate. I'm here today with
Ramsey Fretz, also of Leading Edge Real Estate.
Love to have you. Last week, we discussed all the disruptors, all the choices consumers have, all the ways they can go about doing real estate without traditional agents. And this week we better discuss what the traditional agent ought to do if he wants to still be in business.
In the next 5 to 10 years. And that's
absolutely
what we're gonna dive into.
Well, you know, let's start with some stats. Brian Buffini's been digging into this a lot, and he had some outrageous predictions for the next 3 to 5 years. And he's talking about going from 80,000 brokerages to 10 to 15,000 brokerages.
And Linda, what do you think that really means? Which ones are going to go away and how is that being redefined?
His premise on this, and that of a lot of people at Inman and RIS Media, is that you might have small boutique offices, you know, the 2 to 3 people who are just always going to have the relationships and build a business. But that small office, 15 to 25, 30 agents, just can't bring in all of the technology, all of the marketing power, all of the training, all of the education necessary to have elite status in the market.
So you basically either need to have almost no overhead and be the mom and pop officially, or you need the economies of scale to survive.
Yeah, you know, and I look back thinking how hard it would be to start Leading Edge today, knowing what I know and how long it took to grow till we have all these services to compete with all of the giants everywhere. So with that, they're also saying that 1 out of 3 agents will lead or be on a real estate team.
That's also a surprising figure. I mean, I don't actually know the exact amount of agents in our country, but a third of them is a huge amount. Now, I personally think, I look around the market in the Boston area, and I wouldn't mind getting rid of 1/3 of the agents. I think the barriers to entry are probably a little bit too low. I think there's probably a few too many weekend warriors. And as the market gets pinched, as it gets a little bit more competitive, like they say, the cream rises to the top. I really want to be surrounded by people who are professionals. I always know I look up the other agent when I start a transaction, and I always get a little nervous when they've done 2 deals in the last year. And I think those agents are going to be those 1 out of 3 where, because of the amount of discount brokerages, because of the amount of tech coming in, I really don't see the people who are in this part-time or not 100% focused are going to survive.
There will be a big washout of the unqualified and incompetent. At least that's what we all hope will happen. So Buffini also talked about, in addition to all those real estate companies kind of being in flux, that there's all this capital going into our industry. We talked about the billions of dollars of Wall Street money, private equity money coming into real estate, trying to disrupt us and put their hands in the commission pockets. And there'll be a lot of increased commission pressure. And that's because if the consumer thinks some people will do it for a lot less money, why won't you? They don't understand that what they get in return is fundamentally
And I think
different.
More than any other time in history, showing your services and showing what you can provide that others can't is now fundamental to your survival. If you can't look different, if you can't show the consumer, even before you get to the table, and that's the biggest problem, because a lot of times you're just not going to get to the table anymore when they go directly to these discount and to these basically online sites for brokerage, then you've already lost. And you know, we talked earlier in the last podcast about that 20% who's just looking for the best deal. Those people might start to disappear, but we have to focus on what is left, and we have to focus on who actually still values us, and we have to show that value.
Right. Well, one of the big things Inman is predicting, and I'd like to go through their predictions this year, and this will strike people in the heart coldly, that changes are afoot that will put the consumer first.
Which of course means that for the longest time, Inman has been assuming that we have not been putting the consumer first.
I think most people who've had an experience in real estate think that they weren't put first, that the brokerage was. All of those buyers out there that wonder if their offer was ever really submitted, or, you know, why didn't the listing agent even counter? I would have paid more, but they took their own deal. All of that bad self-serving behavior is hopefully going to be more transparent in this new industry, and the consumer should be first. That's why we're here, and that's who's paying us, because they are demanding more transparency. We talked in the first episode about a swifter transaction, making things go faster, using blockchain, all the holdups, all the uncertainty that we put the consumers through can be changed and put in more of a steroid, like a smartphone, right?
Absolutely. And I would say that, you know, we still don't have a swift transaction. The regulations for our the whole process are not swift. The fact that Massachusetts specifically is a attorney state, and what I mean by that is that we do not have, you know, one contract that everyone uses. We have a an offer to purchase that's pretty similar, but then all of a sudden we go to purchase and sale. So we just basically have more negotiations, more steps of the process than a lot of other states. And I think that instead of just focusing on how do we make this a swifter transaction, how do we make it more convenient for our clients? And how do we also keep them involved in the process? I think that a lot of times they don't know what we're doing behind the scenes, and they also don't know what's next. You know, part of the being with Leading Edge Real Estate has, and it's one of the values of it, has simply been the fact that we have a weekly letter for the whole transaction that says, this is what the next 6 days are going to look like, this is how I'm going to be involved, and this is what I need you to do. If we don't start getting ahead of them, if we don't start stop being reactionary to the issues that happen, then they're going to be more naturally pushing to go towards those discount brokerages again.
Absolutely. So it starts with the first time you're on the phone. You need to say, thanks for calling me. And you can put it in a beautiful letter. And then it'll be, it was nice to meet you. And this is what's happening next. And then it'll be, thanks for hiring me. And this is what's happening next. The consumer needs to know, you know, what's going on with photos? What's going on with going into MLS? How is it going to work? Are we going to hold offers? Are we not going to hold offers? And in addition to, who hasn't experienced feeling frustrated because they feel like they told their client something and then the client didn't hear them? Well, I think we need to reinforce these things with telling them and sending them letters. And that kind of super service model, just like if you're at Nordstrom's and, you know, you're, the guy who's selling shoes is going to be on top of you. The best salesmen are always being proactive with, here, our sale's coming up, this is what's coming in. People like to be thought of and know that you're at top of mind.
Absolutely. And one more point on that note. I really believe that people don't know how much, or buyers and sellers don't know how much actually goes into the process. And so the more that you show them what is happening over that next 3-day period, or what's happening in every single leg of the transaction, the more they're going to see the risks involved with the transaction, and the more they're going to want someone who's really experienced. If we can't upfront and be proactive on showing them how many things can go wrong, because let's face it, we're animals that make decisions off of fear of loss, not what we're going to get. Right, that gut check on if am I going to be protected? Am I going to lose something? If you can't show them up front all of those potential pitfalls, they're not going to see your value, and they're going to go with someone who is cheaper, because if the value is not there, you might as well go cheaper.
Talk about the lottery story you heard.
So it's another great podcast, almost as good as ours, Planet Money. And it's a really great podcast, specifically around, you know, personal finances and stuff like that. But this specific episode was about really fear of loss. And so when the lottery was up to over $1 billion or whatever it was, people would go in, they'd buy their $2 tickets. And on the way out, the Planet Money host would stand at the front door of the convenience store and say, can I buy your ticket for $4? And if we were analytical, rational creatures, we would, and considering the numbers are random for these tickets, we would go back and we would either buy two tickets, so we double our chances, we would sell the ticket and we would buy one and basically have a free one, or we would just double our money immediately and walk away with an extra $2. No one took them up on it. And it wasn't because they didn't want to double their chances or make money. It's because if that ticket was the winning ticket, then they could never live with themselves after that. And so we have to understand that that is the basis of how humans work, that potential loss was so much greater than whatever they could potentially gain or what they could see in front of them as a gain. And we have to remember that during the transaction. It's not just about getting the most amount of money, which is, of course, very important. It's not just about selling at the fastest. It's making sure that your client understands what can potentially go wrong, what probably will go wrong, and how you are going to take care of it as their broker. If you can tap into that gut check, if you can tap into that fear of loss, you're going to tap into a dimension that is much stronger. And they're not going to think about the two or three or four apples that you charge. They're all of a sudden, they're going to start thinking about, is everyone else going to protect me like this person does?
In addition to protection, you mentioned it in our last podcast, but when they go to these discounters, nobody's walking through the steps to maximize their investment. No one is trying to increase their return on investment. No one's suggesting necessarily that they have to paint or do things. Yeah, that can be inconvenient, but who wouldn't put $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 into their house to get a great return that double, triple, quadruple their money? And that kind of loss needs to be articulated. And if they don't understand that, then just selling as is for less money seems okay.
Absolutely. And the more that someone tries to simplify the transaction, sometimes that it actually cheapens the transaction. If it is not a simple process, the reality is it's still very complex and there's still a lot of ways to leave money on the table. And for us brokers in the community, we always assume that buyers and sellers are thinking about, you know, the staging and the painting and where the actual value is in their home,
and
but they're not.
And how home inspections can be negotiated on their behalf and not. All the things that we do to set people up for success, all the things good agents do to set up their clients for success going to negotiation can make tens of thousands of dollars of difference.
And that's what it separates a good agent from a bad one. And the reality is that a lot of good agents don't actually have a chance to articulate that or aren't doing it well enough.
Right. Absolutely. And of course, we talked earlier about iBuyers are energizing the on-demand marketplace. They, you know, you want to sell on demand, an iBuyer will come in, they'll charge you a lot to do it, but the deal's done. Another big prediction by Inman News is that court cases will erode the ICA model. That's the independent contractor model. And, you know, what's going on right now is, let's see, the Realtor.com is being sued along with a lot of MLSs, along with all the big franchises, saying, why is this old tradition of the sellers paying the buyer's agent still in existence? Why does the seller have to offer compensation to the buyer's agent who's working against me? And, you know, this is something we all are going to have to adapt to. I think it has a big chance of, ruling against traditional real estate. But I don't think any good agent should be afraid of it because there's ways to solve everyone getting paid in the transaction.
You know, I think it's a natural progression. There was a period not too long ago where there was no buyer's agent. There was no fiduciary responsibility to the buyer. And everyone, we went over from a seller's agent to a buyer's and seller's agent model, a lot of people freaked out. But the reality is it's a better market for it now. I know that when I go on to MLS and I look at the commission, I have an issue with the fact that someone else negotiated on my behalf for what I should get paid. Now, there's a good brokerage knows how to, and a good broker often knows how to get their full fee out of a transaction. But there's also plenty of times where you don't. And I think that if this court case moves forward and if we lose our traditional model, buyers and sellers agents are still going to get paid. It still happens in a lot of states. I think California has a very separate model right now. Fees are being written directly into the transaction, and we're still getting our commission out of it, but we're actually taking control of what we're actually supposed to get paid instead of another broker sitting at a different table negotiating for us.
So smart. Absolutely. So we're seeing more tech-enabled platforms with integrated services. The consumers are demanding one-stop shopping. That's kind of new. Although people have been selling insurance and title, et cetera, for a long time. But here's the one I really want to talk about. It's pocket listings and other industry bad habits will continue to hurt the consumer experience. So do you want to explain what a pocket listing is?
So I think there's a lot of different versions of a pocket listing, but I think the one that is could hurt the integrity of the industry is the kind of listing that is almost publicly listed, but only for some people. And so it could be a company that does a coming soon, but still allows the coming soon property to be sold before it actually hits MLS. It could be someone who sends it out to a very specific group of brokers or only their buyers. But I think the fundamental important piece to remember at a pocket listing is, first of all, why? why is this pocket listing, or why is it something that's not fully marketed? And then who is to benefit from that pocket listing? The reality is that most of the time when you have a pocket listing, it's sold in-house. We're double ending, we're getting more commission, but are we actually leaving money on the table for our fiduciary, which is our client, our seller? I say this very often to my clients when they say, I've talked to another brokerage where they allow me a long coming soon period and we might be able to sell it twice or have two chances on the market. And I always say the same thing. If you go to a big auction house and the auction's at noon, and they write in noon, it's a bidding starts right then, but there's an asterisk at the bottom that says, we might sell this at 9 a.m. Who's actually that benefiting? And would you, if that was your artifact being sold, would that be something you'd want to happen? Of course you wouldn't. You wouldn't want three people in the room. You'd want the entire world to come to that room and to bid up to its maximum potential. And I think the scary thing is that buyers don't understand that. It sounds really nice to have someone try twice and to test the market and to test the pricing. But the reality is that they're probably going to leave money on the table for you, and they're often going to benefit from it, from that double end.
It's so interesting to see what's going on with pocket listings. I'm coining the term dark listings. They're, like you said, they're listings only some people can see. This is secret inventory that it's like the New York experience. Do you know there's no MLS in New York?
And there's no realtors in New York because they don't actually uphold the standards of a realtor without actual fiduciary benefits to their client.
Absolutely. So we're looking at pocket listings, and I think a lot of consumers are being sweet-talked into doing things that harm themselves. And we know this because we are watching some companies with big coming soons and advertise that they have the secret inventory.
And the new MLS, as it's been called by some people.
The new MLS, and they tell buyers, come and see, you know, our inventory. And they're also saying to these same buyers, when they have the fiduciary to their seller, you can get a deal. You won't have to compete.
Not as much competition.
There's not as much competition. You can save money. Do you think they're telling the sellers that when they're listing their house, going, you know, we have this small period that we can put you in advance? They're not saying, and we have people we're going to bring in because they can get a bargain on your house.
And when you say it that way, which is the truth, and which is the way they're projecting it to the buyers on the other side, no one would go forward with it. But the problem that we're running into is that the average consumer is not doing this every day. They might be selling every 7, 10, 15 years, whatever it may be, but they're not seeing the market every day. And so if I was your seller's agent and I said, listen, Linda, we can go in the market. We're going to go onto MLS if you choose to. But what we can also do is we can put it on early. We can test the market. We can see if anyone's willing to overpay early. We're going to make sure that we're priced the way that we should when we go on MLS. There's no additional days on market. And it's almost a way that you get to try to sell this twice if you want to.
It's risk-free.
It's risk-free. Now, that's very compelling. And the other reality is that if you don't truly understand the market potential of your property, you don't know what you're leaving on the table. I recently did a flip for myself, and I actually almost took an offer that was about 40 to 50 grand less than it actually sold for, specifically because it sounded kind of good. Now, this is a market that I understand. This is my full-time job. I would never let my actual client do this, but someone came forward and I almost took the bait as well. And so we have to be very, very careful as an entire industry to make sure that we're letting those people know, letting those sellers know what they're potentially leaving on the table. And also as an industry, that we're upholding the standards and the fiduciary responsibilities that we should. And when we start to see this from other agents, we should be pushing back.
So let's very quickly define the rules. Okay, here's the rules. If you are going to do any kind of public marketing of a property, you must be an MLS. That's the rules. And that would include everything.
And you're talking about the MLS guidelines, correct?
The MLS guidelines are that if you are going to do any public marketing, Zillow, a sign in the yard, putting it on Facebook, anything that we're sending out postcards about a house, that is public marketing. It must, there is no question, must go into MLS. All right. Now, you can have a non-MLS listing, and there are legitimate reasons to have a non-MLS listing. Someone might be in a very hairy divorce, or maybe they're a hoarder and they, don't want people in their house, or maybe it's a celebrity, right?
It could simply be an investor who says, if you can get me this amount, then I'm willing to sell, but they have no interest in going public. It could be someone who is in the middle of a development who's willing to sell permits. There's a ton of reasons where people don't want to go fully public with it, but the important thing to remember...
Not fully public. Go public. And that's the distinction.
Absolutely.
You can't go half public or be half pregnant.
Very, very true. But there is, you know, there's a lot of reasons when people do decide to leave it private. But the important thing to always wonder and to always ask is who benefits and why? And if the consumer is not benefiting, if your fiduciary is not benefiting, then why is it happening?
So I'm just going to take it back a second. You're absolutely right. Now, no public facing. So what we're seeing happening is people putting coming soon on, that's public facing, and then not going into MLS. So there's the first big infraction. The other infraction is you cannot, according to all of our MLS guidelines, you can't incite anyone to go off market. It cannot be a discussion that is initiated by an agent. It must be initiated by the seller client. You can't do it otherwise. So if that's the case, we know a lot of things are going on and a lot of rules are being broken because people are initiating those discussions. They are publicly advertising them. And then if there's a legitimate coming soon, and there are reasons to have a legitimate coming soon, and that would be...
Well, there's a, like we talked about, there's a lot of reasons that of why those coming soons make sense. But there's also, if you're truly going to have a coming soon listing, it can make a lot of sense to give yourself a little bit more time to start the marketing process. You want to get as many eyes on it as possible. It could be a very unique property. But at the end of the day, if you're going to do that coming soon, you also need to make sure that when that auction happens, it's not at the 9 a.m. and then at the noon as well. It's only one time and everyone gets the fair chance.
So coming soon means it has to be coming soon, there's a price and a photo in MLS, and nobody gets to go in the door until it's in MLS, and until the door's open. In other words, until you're officially launched as active in MLS. And that's a big distinction. You know, we're all about supporting and giving exposure to clients, but then everybody gets a chance to get in the door at the right time. And that's really what's most important. So let's kind of wrap this up, Rams. What I want to do is talk about what can agents do, outside of the things we just talked about, to create a much more valuable experience for the consumer?
I think the first thing that I always try to do for my clients and how some of the ways that I've started to change my business is being 100% on top of what's not what's about to happen, but what could happen. We talked about you have to be proactive, not reactive, but we also use the term that you have to actually pre-resolve issues. What is going to go wrong in this transaction? How are we going to try to fix it up front? And how are we going to provide a really exceptional service? Also, I think it's very important to make sure that we're catering to specific needs. The companies that are coming in, and we've talked about this in the previous podcast, but the companies that are coming in that are discounting or trying to take a piece of the transaction are all about efficiencies. And that's a very important thing. We do have to be extremely efficient. We have to be technology forward. But we also have to make sure that they're still getting a very, very real consumer relationship with us and a personal relationship with us. The more technology that comes in, the more pushback there is on that technology to make sure that they're still dealing with one person through the whole process.
What technology can never do is give the sense that I am behind you, I'm at your back, I'm negotiating as if every one of these pennies is my own. I'm treating your sale like I'm selling my own house. Because we have all, there's so much nuance in this business that can make a huge, huge difference to the outcome. And those agents who don't change are gonna be like, you know, Kodak Film didn't wanna go digital because they wanted to sell film, and Xerox didn't want to use a fax machine because they wanted people to use piles of paper.
And it sounds like it was so long ago, but it really wasn't. And it's happening in our industry now. You have to be ready to change in this industry, but you also have to hold on to your core values while that change happens.
Right. Don't be so in love with yourself and what you're doing that you aren't willing to change. Right?
Absolutely.
So if you're not willing to disrupt yourself, then somebody else will. And with that, we're really excited to come back next week for On the Leading Edge, Redefining Real Estate, where we're going to focus on the recession, what's happening, how we're going to shift in this market.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it.
Thanks for joining us. If you like our podcast, we'd love it if you'd subscribe and leave us a review. Check us out at leadingedgeagents.com or like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of On the Leading Edge.